Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio. And now, here is Walter Bingham.
Hello and welcome to the program for October 20th, 2021, which in the Hebrew calendar we count as the 13th of Cheshvan, 5782. I am Walter Bingham with another selection of news, views, and interviews from Israel and the rest of the Jewish world. In today's program, you will hear some of the facts that clearly show Israel's legal right to this country, contrary to the invented claims of today's so-called Palestinian Arabs. There's also what I consider to be valid criticism of our Supreme Court judgments concerning Jewish rights in Judea, Samaria, and Eastern Jerusalem. There will be a report about the progress of the National Drone Initiative, a venture to organize and manage an infrastructure of hundreds of drones for the purpose of commercial deliveries, medical emergency equipment, etc. And I shall relate the events of a live demonstration in Tel Aviv. I shall also say a few words about this year's infamous Durban 4 conference. Hear also how Israel practices Tikkun Olam in Afghanistan, while the United States seems helpless against the Taliban. But I begin with a report from the annual one-day conference organized by the Jerusalem Post. The 10th Jerusalem Post's one-day annual conference was again a resounding success. It was held at Jerusalem's newest conference center, the Museum of Tolerance. Approximately 200 invited guests, plus many members of the International Press Corps, heard several dozen speakers and panelists expounding their views on subjects ranging from Israel's relations with the diaspora, the importance of Aliyah, to investment opportunities in Israel's economy. The conference opened with an address by our state president, Isaac Herzog, who spoke about the importance of international dialogue, which brought about the remarkable breakthrough in the history of our nation, the Abraham Accords. Israel always has an outstretched hand in peace, he said, and he hoped that more Middle Eastern countries will emulate this path of dialogue and tolerance. On Iran, he said, "Here we see the world's failure to act in concert to settle on a strategy to sever Iran's tentacles in the Middle East, to restrain its ballistic missile program and shut down its nuclear program."
Israel is located in one of the most volatile areas in the world. Israel is an island of stability in a sea of war and unrest. In the midst of this turmoil, Israel stands out as a beacon of order and human progress. Each week we update you on what's happening in this, the Jewish state, a true light unto the nations. This is Jay Shapiro. Join me every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
On Iran, the president said, "Here we see the world's failure to act in concert to settle on a strategy to sever Iran's tentacles in the Middle East, to restrain its ballistic missile program and shut down its nuclear program." Iran is exploiting this inaction, this lack of coordination, which is a clear threat to international peace and security. In Prime Minister Naftali Bennett's speech to the conference, he concentrated on the ongoing internal discourse between ideological and political forces. The right wing, the humanistic global approach, which is the left, he said, and the power of the ultra-Orthodox religious approach, which he believes wields too much power that needs to be curtailed. There is too much polarization instead of cooperation, he stressed. On the terror groups that surround us, Bennett said, "We are showing the world the methodologies, technologies, and intelligence how to deal with them. Israel is a lighthouse of doing good things for the world in a storm." Interviewed by the editor of the Jerusalem Post, Yaakov Katz, Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Justice, Gideon Saar, emphatically stated that he will never allow the establishment of a Palestinian state in our territory and that the Prime Minister is on the same page. He gave a vague answer to the question if there will be a preemptive strike. He stressed that in the meantime, he will legalize police powers to search for illegal weapons without search warrant where reasonable suspicion exists. Would he like to be Prime Minister? Yes, of course, he said. Among the international guests who were interviewed and spoke were former U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Steven Mnuchin, who served as the 77th United States Secretary of the Treasury as part of the cabinet of Donald Trump from 2017 to 2021. I asked him what his future plans are and if he would return to politics if the occasion arises. He replied emphatically that he's finished with politics and is returning to his business of investment banking and hedge fund management. In a panel discussion co-chaired by the editor of the Jerusalem Report, Steve Linde, about the work of the Jewish Agency, panelists were in agreement that Aliyah is the lifeblood of the nation. In the past, the Jewish people needed a state, and now the state needs people. The surprise guest was the president of the International Football, that's Soccer Association, FIFA, Gianni Infantino, who held that post since 2016. In my conversation with him, he expressed pride to have organized the World Cup in Moscow and also the forthcoming one in Doha, and he hopes to be involved in several more. What is your view on the controversy surrounding the British club Newcastle United, which has been bought by Saudi Arabia's public investment fund and is chaired by Mohammed bin Salman, the son of the Saudi king? Do you see a political dimension? International investors, he said, look for opportunities all over the world, and Newcastle United was ripe for a takeover because of their dire financial position. Do you favor a shorter interval between World Cup competitions? He answered, many international competitions are held yearly, like Wimbledon or golf tournaments, so the World Cup could be held, say, every 2 years, but such a decision needs the input of the member clubs. There were attempts to form a Super League of the world's great clubs, which is still under discussion because of the objection of the world's bread and butter clubs. Do you support such a league? Absolutely not, because we must maintain the normal pyramid that comprises football clubs. There are more and more anti-Semitic and particularly anti-black player outbursts from opposing fans, sometimes even throwing missiles at them. Would you favor that players walk off the field during a match in support of their black players? My answer is yes, and it has happened a few times. FIFA has now decided that it is even in the discretion of the referee to call off the match. A tiring day, but all guests and participants felt that it was a productive conference. Israel's National Drone Initiative, which first began its flights over urban areas in January 2021, launched its third phase, attended by five companies which manage and operate autonomous drone networks, and won a grant from the Israel Innovation Authority in the framework of its pilots program, as well as other companies and organizations with a drone fleet who are interested in taking part in the world's leading pilot program. This is the third stage in a series of eight demonstrations expected to take place during the coming 2 years. During the recent 2 weeks, flights took place above residential areas in Tel Aviv, Yaffa, Ramat HaSharon, Herzliya, and Hadera, while in parallel, a flight transport took place in Brazil, controlled by the management system in Israel. Last Monday, October the 11th, the international media was invited to a special explanatory day for the National Drone Initiative. Here is Daniela Patam, the head of C4IR at the Israel Innovation Authority, giving a brief overview of the aims and objects of the drone initiative.
What we can see here, and you'll see today, is, I think, one of the leading worldwide initiatives as to creating a managed drone national network that will enable companies not only to film, to do security jobs, but also to deliver goods. We're very close to the day which we will be able to order our food, clothes, medicine via drones. And we've gone a very long way since we've started this project 2 years ago. The first year when we launched the project, we've achieved 700 sorties. And the second year, we're close to achieving 9,000 by the end of this week. That's a pretty great achievement. Today, you'll meet all the people who've been working on this together with many government entities and mostly Israeli industries, but also foreign companies. We are in the beginning of the creation of a network designed by regulation, designed by technologies, and designed by the market. Our goal is to create a national network that will be economically viable for the use of the people. We do believe in the Israel Innovation Authority and in Ayalon Highways and the Israel Aviation Authority, the Ministry of Transport, that this new technology for delivery, and it's supposed to help us move traffic from the roads to the air. So in our vision, in a few years, you'll see our managed thousands of drones flying above our heads in urban areas. So it's not only a drone delivery system, but in Israel, we're creating it in urban areas because Israel, it's a small country. And if we really want to affect the environment, the traffic in the roads, we have to move traffic from the roads to different usages, and the air is one of them. Why do we use drones? First of all, we're trying to create a more eco-friendly environment. So drones are electric, and the aim is to create an autonomous system to enable all the drones flying at the same time from, I would say, 5 to 16 different companies in every area flying together in one managed system. The system is what makes the ability to create the leap between one drone and a national drone delivery network. Because the system enables all the drones to fly together in one airspace without collision, without flying one into another, and without any damage. Our main concern is to create a safe environment step by step, which means every demonstration, we gradually create a more sophisticated, progressive, and challenging system for technological and also for the usage of the people. Yesterday, we started our first commercial delivery on the coast, but they did open it for the use of the people. It's not only a pilot program. Our vision is to use the collaboration between safety, competition, and regulation to create the future. Why competition? Because we believe this has to be a service that serves all the people. And that's why creating, as well as a national network, also a global network, I think will assist in creating that economically viable, competitive ecosystem. And the third one, regulation. So our vision is for this to be created on a large scale. Today we have 16 companies involved in the project, mostly Israelis, but we do have one Brazilian company flying with us in the local airspace. In Israel, we have two managing systems which enable creating the scale for this project. We will be flying today in Israel and in Brazil, managed by the same USSP system. It's the first time which a program like this is operational in the world. And that will enable us to see what's going on, not only in our country, but also in other countries. We have the triangle of regulation, technology, and resources. For these three main objectives, we hope to achieve our goal and overcome all the challenges, safety, environmental challenges, animals flying in the air, noise. If we want these drones to deliver to as near as possible to our homes, we do need to make sure that it's not too noisy, that it does fit in this environment that we live in. But most of us who live in the urban areas, there are many causes for noise. There are trucks, there are cars, there are children, there are people.
We then saw the control center, which, with its colorful display screens showing the locations of drones in the air, as well as the areas open to such flights. Libby Bahat, head of aerial infrastructure at the Civil Aviation Authority, explained the details of the airspace currently open to drone operations, the maximum altitude and geographical restrictions.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Tamar, she's sassy.
She's smart.
She's funny.
But she's also a real Jewish mother.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tamar Yonah. And yes, I can be all of those things. But at Israel News Talk Radio, I'm here to bring you the news stories and guests that you may not hear anywhere else. Join me live on air Sundays, Mondays, and Tuesdays for the most unique and bold talk radio in Israel.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Shalom, I'm Leah Aharoni. Join me on my show, News from the Torah. Each Sunday, we'll use the weekly Torah portion as a prism for understanding the news today. Listen to News from the Torah to gain clarity about the times we're living in and to understand your own spiritual path in the process. News from the Torah, every Sunday on Israel News Talk Radio.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
Welcome back. We are talking about drone operations. Libby Bahat, head of aerial infrastructure at the CAA, the Civil Aviation Authority, explained the details of the airspace currently open to drone operations, the maximum altitude and geographical restrictions. We heard about the difficulties and challenges that still have to be overcome, among others, the coordination with microlight aircraft and similar that are using the same very low airspace, as well as possible bird strikes. It is the CAA that will give approval for the initiative's security procedures, the registering of drone operators, registering pilots of unmanned aerial vehicles and aircraft, and also the control systems. The system will be autonomously managed from the Ayalon Highway Air Control Center in Tel Aviv and will be able to clear the airspace of drones when aircraft operated by any of the emergency services need to enter. An important use of drones is to deliver donated blood, platelets and plasma from the Magen David Adom blood bank to hospitals, with the goal of verifying the method of packaging, the flying and the procedures so that they will meet the Ministry of Health regulations. As such, the goal of this stage is to consolidate the required procedures so that every company will be able to offer this kind of service at every blood bank and hospital in Israel when required. The opportunities are endless. The highlight of the day was at two locations on the coast, where we could inspect the various drones, see them take off, fly around, as many as five in close proximity of each other, and land. At one location, the operators ordered sushi from Japanica, an establishment in Herzliya, that was promptly delivered by drone to our location at Tsuk Beach. All drones were fitted with a climate-proof box that kept the food either hot or cold. The drones operated at an altitude of not higher than approximately 180 feet at a speed of 50 kilometers per hour. The second location of our tour was in the Charles Klaw Gardens in Tel Aviv, a shaded spot close to the beach. A different drone operating company demonstrated their skill by ordering ice cream from Golda, a known store a few kilometers to the south of us, all done from an app on the cell phone. After a short wait, the first drone arrived, carrying several half-kilo boxes of delicious ice cream. 5 minutes later, a second drone arrived with more of the refreshing and welcome treat on a hot day. I must add that it was in perfect frozen condition. Of course, The system is not yet commercially viable, but it was impressive to see what conveniences are in store for us here in Israel. When I was born almost 98 years ago, nobody could have dreamt of the technological era that is the 21st century. I wonder what the children who are born today will see in 100 years. I hope that besides technology, it will be a powerful state of Israel, living in peace with all its neighbors and contribute to the advancement of the area. Ever since the establishment of the State of Israel, our country faces land disputes with our Palestinian Arab neighbors. They are mainly about what were for hundreds of years barren hilltops in our heartland of Judea and Samaria. Only a few Bedouin families, leading a simple nomadic way of life, moved between them. There were no permanent buildings, and the terrain did not lend itself to agriculture. Two or three historic Jewish cities existed in the whole area that was once known as Palestine, a name given by the Greeks in the 5th century to a province of Syria. But long before that, the 12 tribes of Israel formed the first constitutional monarchy in the land at about 1000 before the Common Era. The holy city of Jerusalem was the location of the Jewish temples, the first of which was destroyed in 422 before the Common Era, and the city was also the seat of David, our second king. Jews have been living in Jerusalem continuously for some 2,000 years and have constituted the largest single group of inhabitants, equally in more modern times since the 1840s. Let me give you some historical facts. Jewish rights in the territory, referred to as the West Bank, that's Judea and Samaria, was expressly recognized as legitimate in the Mandate for Palestine adopted by the League of Nations, which provided for the establishment of a Jewish state in the Jewish people's ancient homeland, as stated in Article 6. The text is well known. Some Jewish areas, such as Hebron, existed throughout the centuries of Ottoman rule, while places such as Neve Yaakov, north of Jerusalem, the Gush Etzion block in Judea, the communities north of the Dead Sea, and Kfar Darom in the Gaza region were established under British mandatory administration prior to establishment of the State of Israel. Many Israeli so-called settlements have been established on sites which were home to Jewish communities in previous generations in an expression of the Jewish people's deep historic and religious connection with the land. During more than 1,000 years, the only administration which has prohibited Jewish settlements was the illegal Jordanian Occupation Administration, which during the 19 years of its rule, from 1948 to 1967, declared the sale of land to Jews a capital offense, punishable by death. The right of Jews to establish homes in these areas and the legal titles to the land which had been acquired could not be legally invalidated by the Jordanian or Egyptian occupation of Gaza, which resulted from their armed invasion of Israel in 1948, and such rights and titles remain valid to this day. The provisions of the Geneva Convention regarding forced population transfer to alleged occupied sovereign territory cannot be viewed as prohibiting the voluntary return of individuals to the towns and villages from which they or their ancestors had been ousted. Remember, I'm talking about the expulsion of Jews by the Romans. Nor does it prohibit the movement of individuals to land which was not under the legitimate sovereignty of any state and which is not subject to private ownership. In this regard, Israeli so-called settlements have been established only after an exhaustive investigation process under the supervision of the Supreme Court of Israel, designed to ensure that no communities are established on private Arab land. And here we have another problem. because the Jordanians, during their illegal occupation of what they called the West Bank, settled there Arabs and gave them land that didn't even belong to them. And these are the false documents with which the Palestinian Arabs today claim ownership of the land. Back to Israeli settlement in Judea and Samaria, objected to by the international community. It should be emphasized that the movement of individuals to the territory is entirely voluntary, while the settlements themselves are not intended to displace Arab inhabitants, nor do they do so in practice. Repeated charges regarding the illegality of Israeli settlements must therefore be regarded as politically motivated without foundation in international law. Similarly, as Israeli settlements cannot be considered illegal, they cannot constitute a grave violation of the Geneva Convention, and hence any claim that they constitute a war crime is without any legal basis. If any war crime was committed, I venture to say that it was the Jordanians who appropriated the land west of the Jordan that didn't belong to them and distributed it to its citizens. Political charges against Israel cannot justify in any way Palestinian Authority acts of terrorism and violence against innocent Israelis. Politically, the West Bank, that's the Jewish heartland of Judea and Samaria, could at best be regarded as territory over which there are competing claims which should be resolved in peace process negotiations. Israel has valid claims to title in this territory based not only on its historic and religious connection to the land and its recognized security needs, but also on the fact that the territory was not under sovereignty of any state and came under Israeli control in a war of self-defense imposed upon Israel. At the same time, different Israeli governments have expressed the mistaken belief that the Palestinians also entertain legitimate claims to the area. Indeed, the very fact that the parties have agreed to conduct negotiations on settlements indicated that they envisage a compromise on this issue, not, I hasten to say, establishing a separate state. The agreements reached between Israel and the Palestinian Authority contain no prohibition whatsoever on the building or expansion of Jewish villages or towns. On the contrary, it is specifically provided that the issue of settlements is reserved for permanent status negotiations, which are to take place in the concluding stage of the peace talks. Indeed, the parties expressly agreed that the Palestinian Authority has no jurisdiction or control over settlements or Israelis pending the conclusion of a permanent status agreement. That also implies that their expansion into Israeli-controlled Area C with the connivance of the European Union is totally illegal. So much for a short explanation of the legality of Israel's claim to this land. Stay tuned, there's more.
In a time where feelings have become fact, where rational thought and common sense has disappeared, one man stands above it all.
I'm Howie Sobiker, your political hitman.
Political Hitman airs every Tuesday at 11:59 p.m. North American time, 7 a.m. Israeli time, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Are you interested in transforming your life, drawing closer to the Creator, and uncovering the deeper meanings and hidden treasures in the Hebrew Bible?
Then join me, Rav Yitzhak Michelson.
And me, William Hall.
On The Science of Kabbalah, where we are seeking to narrow the gap between what we understand of our physical and spiritual worlds. So make sure to tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
And now, Here is Walter Bingham.
Earlier in the program, very briefly, I mentioned the work of Israel's Supreme Court. But there too, all is not well when it comes to their judgment on the rights of our people to the heartland of Israel, Judea and Samaria. For most of my life, I lived in England and learned to trust the legal system, because there, all High Court judges are appointed by the Queen. Yes, of course, it is the Prime Minister who recommends the name to Her Majesty, but, and this is the big but, he is bound by an independent selection committee and must follow the name they give him. He cannot by himself appoint anyone. And politics plays no part in it whatsoever. Therefore, the judiciary is not beholden to any government policy and is totally independent and fair. They scrupulously carry out the legislation laid down by Parliament and case law. Now, what about Israel's judiciary? The slogan on their website is very interesting. It quotes Isaiah 1, "Zion will be redeemed with justice and her captives with righteousness." Many of their judgments have turned this slogan on its head. They imprisoned Jewish, mostly religious, demonstrators and hold them without trial, including children. Then they call it protective custody. It's a term that was used by the Nazis to imprison Jews and other opponents of the regime without trial. There are frequent arrests, and the Supreme Court approved legal and political processes that cement its position as an arm of power, rather than as an independent judicial authority. Our courts are serving the government, and the way our judges are appointed will never lead to a truly independent judiciary. Here is just one example. After years of struggle to gain possession of some houses in the Shimon HaTzadik, Sheikh Jarrah district of Jerusalem, owned by the Nachlat Shimon Company, but occupied by Palestinian Arabs, or to at least receive a rent, the Supreme Court has done this government's bidding. The court has recognized the Arabs as protected tenants and granted a period of 15 further years for them to remain in their homes. However, the judgment is not binding, pending an appeal to be lodged before November 2nd. The Jewish families who were living there had to flee in 1948 to the western part of Jerusalem, and it was the Jordanian occupying authority that granted illegal possession to the Arab families. Just as the selection of Knesset members must be radically overhauled to achieve accountability if Israel wants to display democracy in action and not only in name, so must the judiciary be overhauled and judges' terms of office predetermined. This year, the infamous Durban Conference Against Racism and a hotbed of antisemitism promoted by the UNHCR, the United Nations Human Rights Council, passed without the usual loud publicity. A total of 38 countries openly boycotted this 20th anniversary of the World Conference Against Racism, citing concerns of antisemitism and anti-Israel bias. They were Albania, Australia, Austria, Bulgaria, Canada, Colombia, Croatia, Cyprus, Czech Republic, Denmark, Dominican Republic, Estonia, France, Georgia, Germany, Greece, Honduras, Hungary, Israel, Italy, Latvia, Lithuania, Montenegro, Moldova, Netherlands, New Zealand, North Macedonia, Poland, Romania, Serbia, Slovakia, Slovenia, Spain, Sweden, Ukraine, UK, US and Uruguay. The European Union also did not participate or speak at the commemoration. At the votes that were taken, there were several abstentions. It was at the first conference in 2001 that the term Zionism is racism was first discussed. And interestingly, the Protocols of the Elders of Zion was sold at this year's venue. And finally, while the Americans find excuses, Israel acts. Ever since the Taliban took control of the Afghan capital Kabul and closed the airport to rescue flights, the Biden administration threw up its arms, helpless to fly out even the last of its stranded citizens. They added insult to injury. While this was going on, Israel worked quietly and without publicity to rescue 125 vulnerable Afghan citizens and brought them to Albania. According to Jerusalem Post's Lahav Harkov, they included judges, journalists, TV presenters, human rights activists, artists, cyclists, scientists, law enforcement officers, and relatives of Afghan diplomats. Earlier, the humanitarian aid organization Israel Aid assisted in the evacuation of 42 Afghan women and girls to the United Arab Emirates. The CEO of Israel Aid, Yotam Politzer, expects all the 167 refugees to be resettled in Canada, France, and Switzerland, where Israel Aid will provide support for the long term while they build a life for themselves. The Israeli-Canadian philanthropist Sylvan Adams, owner of the Giro d'Italia bicycle race, who brought it to Israel in 2018, is no stranger to Israel. He is involved in the Israel Aid operation and called it by the ancient Jewish dictum Tikkun Olam, repair the world. The start of the 2018 Giro d'Italia was held in Israel to pay tribute to Italian cyclist Gino Bartali, a three-time winner of the race. Bartali helped rescue hundreds of Italian Jews during the Holocaust and was recognized by Yad Vashem in 2013 as a righteous among the nations. If you've got any comments about what you've heard in this show today, or indeed any other of my program, then please write to walter@israelnewstalkradio.com, where you will always get my personal reply. Alternately, you can put your comments on the message area on the Walter Bingham File page. And that's it for today. Until the next time, this is Walter Bingham wishing you a safe week. As usual, I ask you to visit your elderly neighbor to see if they need anything, because you know that many are too scared of COVID to leave their homes and depend on charities or nice neighbors like you. Goodbye.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candlelighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
Howdy, this is Rita from League City, Texas, now living in Israel. And though my heart may have belonged to Texas, it now belongs to Israel and all the fantastic show hosts at Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Michael Solomon from Kiryat Arba, Israel. And why do I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio? Because I love listening to the interesting interviews they do and their news reporting that most other media sources don't cover.
Hey, this is Nicole Eko from Malmo, Sweden. It gets pretty cold here in Sweden, so I love cuddling up with a warm cup of tea while I listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Frank Morris from Tennessee. Me and my dog Buster really love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.